Hey there, Shop Maniacs. How you doing? Welcome to another episode of the Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave Rupert. With me is Chris Quirr. Hey, Chris.
Hey, $6.99, actually. I just saw that. I don't know why that. Does that feel cool? Is that like, it's like the sexy number and another nine, which is like extra sexy?
Yeah, it's kind of like, illicit. We'll say.
Yeah.
It's very illicit. Yeah.
Well, we have I was going to say we have the internet's own Jeremy Keith here, but I'm really going to say the web's own Jeremy Keith. Hi, Jeremy, by the way.
Oh, hi, and thank you for the clarity in that, Chris. I appreciate that. That's good.
Yeah. Like, can you imagine? There's probably people that work heavily on the internet. Like, they're internet people who have nothing to do with the web.
Yeah.
Right. Like they are really into some other protocol that happens to smurf about the wires of the internet, but just don't really care about the HTTP part.
Well, every native app developer, I guess, is an internet developer technically, but not a web developer.
Is it that not? Oh man, we're already in it. We already stepped in it. That Delta. It's like, your app is a bunch of web views. Like, why you're like, oh, my native app development is just HTML all up and down. You know, that drives
me. But is it convoluted? I know we're just in it, but deal with it, people. You've been listening to this show for a while, so you know the deal. You, even though your web, let's say it isn't web views, it really is like Swift or whatever crap or Java. It still likely is making like fetch requests or whatever the Swift to your Postgres or whatever. And those really are using like internet addresses
protocols
to access data, right? So that part is webby. Or could you like not do that too? Like if yours doesn't
you could totally just use HTTP. Yeah. But none of that matters. None of that matters, because what matters is, can I link to it? Does it have a URL? It's the URL that makes it the web, in my opinion.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
That's my hot take.
People are not as protective as they should be about URLs. We need like the URL gang, where we're like really mad when stuff doesn't have URLs. To this day, it bugs me. Like, even though I use Instagram and stuff sometimes, at least that crap has URLs, unless it's like a story or whatever. And then I think sometimes stories do, but sometimes they just disappear. Like, who in God's name wants to take the time and effort to post something on the internet and then have it just go away?
Instagram makes it very hard. They try to hide their URLs. Like, you know, in the app, the ability to copy URL got moved out of the regular interface. Like, it's buried in the basement somewhere now.
When they don't let you put URLs to your own stuff on photos, they don't.
And I've seen that behavior leak out of Instagram, where people are like, link is in the bio on a regular website where they could just put a link. They'll be like, my link is in my bio.
Oh, no,
like,
they just assume just that they can't link.
Exactly.
That's too bad.
Facebook's whole model was, well, it was hot or not for college kids, which is gross. But then it was links, you know, like that built Facebook's empire, you know, and then they're like, no, actually, no. You guys got to stay here. Yeah.
Well, it's like it leaks into journalism. And I'm sure the practice is much older there. But like the New York Times sure as hell won't link to a website in a news article about something that has a very clear URL to it. What is that? I mean, can you conceptually understand that it's like, well, we don't want to. Links have some kind of internet currency, or at least they used to, right? Like if the New York Times links to something, the SEO value of it potentially is high. And that might affect like the journalistic integrity of what's being written, because perhaps somebody's just pulling strings trying to get a link in there. Is that all it is? Or is there something more to that?
I think it does vary from place to place. Like, I think the BBC does very occasionally link to stuff, but they'll make sure they've got the disclaimer saying, well, we're not responsible for any external links. But to be fair, at least they've got links in the article sometimes. Very rarely.
Right. I just felt like if you're going to write about the national parks updated their hour and or something like that, and there's like a link to the national park website, it's like, put the link in there. Crikey. Okay. All right. Wow, we started off weird here. We have Jeremy coming on the show
hot.
For a very
coming in hot. We're good. Hey.
Specific reason here. Jeremy's going to be the host, as he is at many conferences, but this is an extra special one because it's coming up soon here in Wrighton, Brighton, which is where you live, is it not?
It is indeed. Brighton, England, that is. Not Brighton, Massachusetts. Right.
Okay, good clarity there. In Brighton, 12th of March, 2026. Coming up here, less than 2 months. It's called Web Day Out. I'll let you guess the URL. It's webdayout.com. So that's coming up, and I'm assuming you're very excited about it. Right in your backyard, Jeremy.
Yes, this is kind of my baby. This is something I've wanted to do for a while. A bit of a bet, I guess. A bit of a hypothesis testing that there is appetite for this. I'm really hoping there is.
So you're doing it, like Clear Left is doing it, but you're doing it.
It's being run by Clear Left, where I am and have been for 20 years. If you can believe that, Clear Left has been going 20 years. Wow. Yeah, that's crazy. And we've been running events the whole time. Like our first event was the year we founded Clear Left, that's just nuts. But this is brand new. We've always run some big flagship events. You know, we ran Deconstruct for a few years. We've still got UX London, Leading Design. These are big, long-running conferences, a lot of pedigree. But then we do these sort of little, I call them the cheap and cheerful conferences, with like one day in and out, focused on a topic. Good few years back, we did Responsive Day Out. They always have this kind of day out theme, you know, make it one day.
Yeah.
And that was really good. I'm like, we did it once and it was successful. Like, let's do it again. Or maybe we'll do it a third time. And that was 2011, 2012. And then we did one on design systems called Patterns Day. That proved to be really popular. Yeah, right. So we ran that one again. Yeah, yeah. So we spin up these kind of events, you know, where we kind of smell that there's something in the air that you know, we could get people together for a day.
And this time entire web.
Well, it is, but it is more constrained than it sounds. Than it's like Web Day Out, it's the web. Well, if you read the kind of highly opinionated description of the event, it is specifically about stuff in browsers. What can you do in browsers? And even more specific than that, what can you do directly as opposed to use this framework or use this library? So I guess the web platform is the term that fits this the best. And so my hypothesis is that there's people want that.
I saw you have a link on their agenda, and I was going to ask, what is your agenda, Jeremy Keith?
Yeah, well, that is a good question. You can read the agenda. A lot of questions being asked here about my agenda that are already answered by my agenda. this is a very opinionated conference. It literally has an agenda, but I feel like the just straight up using the browser APIs, whether it's JavaScript, CSS, HTML directly, is underrepresented at events, on the web in general, you know, training courses, all that kind of stuff. So I guess if I have an agenda, it's kind of open people's eyes to what you can do right now. So like, for example, I decided I could get people really excited by showing them some really cutting edge stuff that's, you know, just landed and will be shipping in browsers soon. And I thought, no, actually, I'm going to try and stick to stuff you can use. Like Monday morning, you go back into work, you can start using stuff in production.
Right.
I love conferences where people do crazy demos to demonstrate a technology. Like I've seen some fantastic talks to demonstrate, you know, the web audio API or something live on stage.
Yeah.
But I thought, I want to keep this actually focused to like working web developers who need.
That's a good name too, like Monday Morning Conf or something. I like that is that you can literally use this, and because there's stuff. Yeah, it's I fall into the trap too. It's tempting to write about stuff too Let alone have a conference about, but that you're like, oh, it's so new, I want to show it. You know, I'm thinking of something like I was looking at, I keep trying to play with popover hint, which I think is cool. It's the first time in HTML where you can be able to like, you have like hover in HTML now, like what? Yeah. That's a first, you know, but that's not Monday morning stuff. It's not Monday morning. Not yet.
No, but I think it's important that we have events where that kind of stuff gets covered. I think it's really important. Right. And, you know, there are definitely events that, that do that, which is great. And I actually love going to those events, and they get me really fired up to investigate that stuff further.
Anchor positioning, though. Monday morning, baby. Kind of.
Yeah, anchor almost. Positioning could be I think maybe it'll make an appearance somewhere in Web Day Out. We'll see. We'll see. Maybe. Who knows?
I'm a big fan. Big fan. Very, very, very cool stuff. Changes how you think a little bit. You almost need to... you know, there's kind of a moment. I don't know. I think I've got this from you probably, as I do most of the stuff. There's like a, some moment happens that's hard to pin down. And I'm thinking of, for example, you've written like margin left your whole life. And then at some point, all of a sudden your fingers start typing margin inline start. And you're not really sure how or why exactly. You're just like, you've read about it enough. You're like mentally convinced enough. But then you're like, all right, I'm just going to start doing it. That will happen with anchor positioning too.
And it's always hard to begin with, you know. Yeah, but then after I feel like it's about two or three projects, and then suddenly it's like, you if you tried to go back, it would be weird. You know what I mean?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that the, as soon as you type position absolute, there'll be a mental shift where you're like, okay, but what am I anchoring this to? Not like what's the nearest relative parent that's matters so that I can adjust based on that. That's my mental model now, is like, what's the nearest relative parent? And eventually I'm going to stop. I'm not going to care anymore. I'm going to be like, what's the thing that I'm trying to anchor it to?
When you think about all the accumulated knowledge we no longer need, that's rattling around in our brains somewhere, like all those hacks we needed for floating things that now floats things anymore, you know?
Total novelty to float something for sure.
Occasionally it comes in handy, like border collapse, you know? It's like, if you've, don't have a reset, or you don't have like, you know, and you make a table, you're like, what happened to it? Why, what? Yeah. It broke. You know, I broke the table. And then you just need this like old magic.
Yeah, you got to know this stuff sometimes. I like that. What's the one that I always forget, is the fixed sizing on the cells, table something fixed or whatever, where you're like, don't be weird. Just be the freaking size I told you to be, cells.
My coworker has a website called css.properties, which is like, it's list of the properties and all properties? The values.
Is it TLB?
Yeah, pretty. Yeah. So John Crayhoe, css.properties. It's like just a index lookup, but it's actually pretty good. It tells you all the browser support. But like, I think what you're looking for there is table-layout. Equals auto
table
or fixed,
layout fixed. Yeah, that's a weird one. See, the kids don't know that these days. You'll never know.
Well, I'll tell you what, when I talk about Clear Left being 20 years old, when we founded Clear Left, I tell you, the name Clear Left was really like on the front of everybody's minds writing CSS. You would write that declaration every day.
Oh, yeah.
Now I have to explain. I have to explain what clear left means.
Yeah.
Because you don't need to clear
that was your marketing. That was your whole marketing.
Worse. Oh, man. Worse. It's not even a logical property, right? We're clearing left.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
no.
Oh, yeah.
Which nobody did to begin with, Jeremy. You always, everybody cleared both.
Yeah, true.
You know, should have been clear both. that's great. Clearing is weird stuff. You know, I feel like it's also like the reason people reach for it is because they want to use shape outside. Because shape outside is so weird and cool. Yeah. And the only way to use it is floating. So that's that.
This episode is brought to you by AxeCon, the world's largest digital accessibility conference, from our friends over at DQ, makers of the Axe DevTools browser extension. You may not recognize the name, but you've surely used them. Every time you run a Lighthouse audit in Chrome, the accessibility results are coming from Axe. Anyway, they are inviting you to join AxeCon in February. It's their annual virtual conference welcoming developers to learn about building, testing, and maintaining digital accessible experiences. Over 35,000 people attended last year, and it's free. I spoke at AxeCon in 2021. It was huge and amazing then, and it just keeps getting bigger and better every year. The experts who present at AxeCon are a who's who of innovation, AI, and accessibility, representing organizations such as GitHub, Microsoft, Meta, Red Hat, Atlassian, AWS, and more. You've got to attend if you're looking to automate more of your accessibility testing efforts. If you want to know, like if you want to know where accessibility is headed in 2026, AxeCon is the place to be. The whole conference is virtual, free, and takes place on February 24th to 25th. Register at dequ.com/axcon, dequ.com/axe-con. Hope to see you there. I'll give you some options for rebrands here.
Rebrands
instead
option A. You could,
option A is going to be.
You're just looking at CSS.properties now, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm just kind of grifting this site. So, I think option A is going to be flip inline. You know, that's a good new
that
one.
That works so well here in England, I tell you.
you know, you could border image slice. Which is everyone's favorite property.
I remember that.
And then I'll give you.
I don't.
Yeah. Oh, you like remember in? Okay, now we're really struggling. Do you remember Fireworks? The graphics program.
A little, yeah. It's the yellow one.
Slices kind of way of doing it.
Yeah.
There's a way to do that in CSS. By like slight, you can say use this bit of. Yeah, it's arcane. Ancient knowledge.
Oh, yeah, that's what border image was. Border. I remember border image. I just don't remember border image slice. So slice was one of the. You mean border image was a shorthand, and slice was one of the values of the shorthand? Is that probably what was going on there?
As if I'm going to have instant recall of this CSS in the year 2026.
Yeah. Okay.
Fair enough. I think it's border dash image dash slice, and then you just. Pass well either 100% or like number soup, like you just say like 522 pixels, you know, like it just you cut the image up basically.
I think I shipped something with border image yesterday, maybe. It occasionally is still useful in the like I don't want to think about it too hard, but it's a you know, if you want to, this is all hot recently, probably, you know, it's one of the like AI looks, I think, is a gradient border. And if you don't think about it too hard and you just set like a linear gradient on border image, it kind of works. And then you're like, cool, I don't want to think about it too hard, but that seemed to work. So,
well, if you do want to think about it too hard, you need to get in with slices where you take a slice of an image and position.
You can't border radius it, right? Wasn't that a limitation? Ooh.
Probably.
Maybe that's not true these days anymore. Okay, too deep.
I don't like this rabbit hole we've gone down. I'm scared of this rabbit hole.
That's new one. EJ. Next.
Well, I was thinking about on CSS.properties, there's like a command K, but you have to press control. You can tell your boy's a Windows guy who only binds to control K.
No, he uses a magnet. Yeah.
Well, can you really? Because why isn't it command K then, Dave?
I don't know.
I don't know. But so you're familiar with Command K. It is like taken over the as like a little meme. It's like when websites have like a command palette or whatever you call it. Even like
a palette.
Even DevTools has it, you know, and I kind of like it, actually. It's like, does your app do things? Then just make a Command K thing and type stuff into it and it will go popularized by like stuff. Anyway, what do you think, Jeremy?
I saw something recently where somebody pointed out, like, so you know, if you're making a progressive web app, or not, you're taking a website and turning it into a progressive web app, so you're going to have a manifest file. Well, one of the things you can have in a manifest file is this list of shortcuts, which do used, especially now. Yeah. So, you know, on the Mac, you can add sites to the dock. If it's, you know, you can add any site, but if it's a progressive web app that's got a manifest, Safari. It's even better. Yeah, yeah. But actually, well, no, Chrome and Edge as well. I got to jump to their defense here. I like Safari's implementation probably the best, but yeah, absolutely.
Are you talking about the Safari, web install API or what?
Just the progressive web app, just like where the web install thing where you can prompt users to do it, that's something separate. But just the fact that, you know, you can take any website and say add to doc. Right. Yep. But if that website has a manifest file, even better, because you say, okay, use these icons in the doc. Great.
Right.
And one of the things you can have in a manifest file is a list of shortcuts. And if you do this for a website that ends up in the doc, you know, those are now accessible, I think, under the file menu or window. Anyway, that list is accessible. And somebody pointed out, this is to bring it back around to your command K, here's our list of shortcuts. Anything you would have in a command K palette is a really good candidate for put it in the list of shortcuts in your manifest file.
Absolutely. Why did I bring that up? Okay, because Web Day out and we're talking about Monday morning stuff and all that. The new CodePen has a command K bar too. I think it's cool. I think it's, you know, like, is it a trend? Maybe, but it's kind of a... It's nice if everybody does it. Like there's this, okay, how do I do this thing again? I need to, I don't know, invite somebody to this document or something. Command K and just going to type invite. Probably it'll find the place that I need to send me to do inviting or something. That's like the theory is that I don't have to remember every keyboard shortcut. I remember one keyboard shortcut and then type in basically what I'm looking for. I like kind of like it. Anyway, so like a thing, and what's the thing that everybody uses? Raycast or whatever? That's a it's a Mac specific app, but that popularized it even more so maybe than Spotlight did because it's a command for your whole computer thing. So imagine on a website though that has all these keyboard shortcuts, like Jeremy's talking about. Command K comes up and it brings up something that is over top of the rest of your website. We might call that a dialogue these days, especially because it's going to have a thing that you type in. So there's going to be a cursor blinking. Probably something underneath it shouldn't be able to take focus away from that. Like that would be a problem, right? And I was noticing in our implementation of it, which is, you know, we're in private beta on it, right? So it's not like for the world is using it yet. So this is the time for us to be sorting out little things like this. I even found a situation where you could lose focus up to the thing underneath it. I'm like, oh, that sucks. Because we're not asking the browser to like enforce the focus trap ability of a dialogue. And if all we did was just use a dialogue element instead of the div that it currently is, we just get that for free. Because a dialogue, the focus is just trapped in there when it's open, which I think is great. So it's just one of those little things I got to get around to doing. And, you know, I don't think that's specifically going to be a thing that somebody talks about at Web Day Out, but that's the kind of thing, right? Like ask the browser to do stuff.
Okay, let's say this Command K thing gets really popular. Most websites you go to, you hit Command K, you get this palette of options. At some point, you do start to ask the question, should this be... you know, in the, should it be an API that I can use directly in the browser? Like, let the browser do the hard work. Maybe it's an extension of Dialog. Maybe Dialog's just the first kind of Dialog, and this is like, you know, Dialog Palette 2.0.
That's a good question. It is funny because anything that has to do with commands like that are really... what is a good word? Shoehorned or something into the web? All they are is... tapping into the idea that there's an event in JavaScript that you listen for that's just a key down, and there's modifiers for the key down, so you can listen for like the modifier key being the control key and the button being pressed as K. Like, is that good enough as an API, or are so many of us doing, you know, these things? Maybe a command should be an event itself, you know, like help us out here.
That's the question. At what point, you know, is everyone reinventing the same wheel? You go, let's give you a basic wheel in every browser, and then you take that as your starting point. That's a reasonable example of something to keep an eye on. Like, well, you know, at some point we should probably have a browser API for this.
Yeah.
Do you think we're doing a good job at that? Like paving the cow paths. I think I have your book over here that says that. Or, you know, like, do you think we're still doing that, or is it getting weirder? Or
I think that's been we've been doing that more in the past couple of years than in maybe the 10 years before that. I feel like there was a bit of a shift. So if you think back to the Extensible Web Manifesto, a lot of that, and I think mostly rightly, was look, let's give the developers access to the low-level tools and they figure out how to build, you know, what's right for them, so rather than us trying to predict what they want. And that's how we got, you know, great low-level stuff like service workers and all kinds of platform stuff. But the idea, I believe, and web components, frankly, you know. But I believe the idea was then at some point later, we step back and we look, okay, how are people using this stuff? What's the really common patterns they, you know, they're using it over and over for? All right, let's codify that. Let's make those things, you know, part of the browser, either as HTML elements or APIs or whatever. And that wasn't happening for a long time. And I feel it's finally been happening. A lot of it thanks to the Open UI group, right? Look, their whole thing is like, here's a common pattern. Everyone's reinventing the wheel. Let's try to come up with a wheel that will make most people happy. So I feel like it's been happening more than it was maybe, you know, 10 years ago. But those are the kind of time scales I'm thinking of, like, well, 10 years ago it was like this, but 5 years ago things started to get better, you know.
Well, and I would say too, interop has been a huge boon for us in CSS world. I mean, you know, it was in that decade. It was like ES 2013, ES 2014, ES 20, you know, like ECMAScript and JavaScript is like rapidly advancing. And, you know, so it became the hotness and everyone's focusing on that. And, but in the last like 5 years, CSS has been steamrolling just so hard. And we're getting features in a year and in like a year or 2 years, as opposed to prior
years, maybe. And years.
just question marks. Like, is Opera going to do it? Who knows? You know, that's where we were a decade ago, right? So, different world things.
It feels like there's waves of like a particular part of the stack seems to get more attention. Obviously, HTML5, it was more than HTML. It was lots of JavaScript stuff too. But HTML got a lot of love around about 2010, 2011, right? We got all these new form things and new structural elements. And then that kind of petered out. And JavaScript, like you say, it was like, we're going to have a new version of ECMAScript every 6 months or less. And that was really, you know, where the energy was spent. And then you're right. At some point, it was like, CSS. Why don't we start shipping loads of great new CSS features? Boom, boom, boom. Which was a joy to see. Like, you'd almost see people starting to get CSS fatigue in the same way they were getting JavaScript fatigue a few years previously.
That's happening now, I feel like.
Yeah, there's so much. Yeah. There's so much. There is. I would like to see it cycle back around to HTML, which is sort of beginning to happen. I mean, the dialogue stuff, obviously, the command invoker stuff, obviously web components.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest one. Is that invoker stuff is pretty wild.
Oh, yeah, invokers is awesome. That leads me to my next segment, which is a show within a show called The Hot Seat. Chris Enns, roll the intro reel.
It's time for everyone's favorite show within a show, The Hot Seat with Jeremy Keith.
Okay, Jeremy Keith, do you know the permission element? Are you familiar with permission?
Yes. Okay. And I'm also familiar with its new ancestor.
That's what I wanted to ask.
Geolocation element.
That's what I was going to ask you. Does the web need a geolocation element in the hot seat?
Okay. So my opinion on this is I think the web absolutely, I wouldn't say needs, it would be really nice to have a declarative way of doing geolocation. So to step back, my favorite kind of web features are the ones where there is both a declarative and an imperative version. So there's something you either can do it in HTML, CSS, or if you need more control, you reach for your JavaScript. And the HTML or CSS version doesn't need to do everything. It just needs to hit the like 80% use cases. And if you need more finessing than that, all right, we're not going to overextend HTML. You got to go use JavaScript. So like form validation is a good example. Is the field required? Is it an email? we can just do that in HTML now. You want to get into the finicky testing, you know, other kind of is valid stuff, you got to reach for JavaScript, and that's fine. HTML doesn't need to. So something like geolocation only exists as an imperative thing up till now. You have to use JavaScript. There's other APIs like this. Any APIs where you can only do it in JavaScript, the question should be asked, could there be an declarative version of this? And again, the declarative version doesn't need to solve all use cases, just like, what is the 80% use case? Can we do that with HTML?
What is the 80% use case? Although you're on the hot seat. For
geolocation, get the current location, pass it to something. It's pretty hard to avoid JavaScript with geolocation.
I can imagine an attribute, but what would the angle bracket version do?
That exists now. It basically creates a button, which brings me to my specific opinion on this specific element is I'm seeing a lot of duplicated effort happening because we got the geolocation element coming out of this one bunch of people saying, hey, check this out. It kind of basically generates a button with an icon and some text that's going to be really hard to style because security. Meanwhile, over in invokers, we got them working on, okay, we'll have one value for triggering some browser API, and they're currently collecting things like, you know, my hobby horse has been there should be a declarative version of the web share API to just cover the 80% use case, which is copy the current URL or share the current URL, right?
Mm-hmm.
Arc browser's best feature was like command shift C or whatever, like copy the URL. Like, I mean, it should be a thing.
That's the 80%. Yeah. And the web share API can do much more than that. And if you want to do much more, you're going to need JavaScript. I'm fine with that. But there should be an HTML element to just trigger, you know, the web, the stuff, the system level sharing. And I feel like geolocation, I mean, there's a bunch of stuff. Copy to clipboard, maybe even bookmark, a lot of browser-based stuff. There should be some declarative version. Now, do I want a web share element and copy the clipboard element? Do you see how it starts to get, it starts to maybe pollute the namespace a bit. Whereas if you look at invokers and what they're doing, they're distilling it down to this pattern of, well, all these things require user interaction anyway. So let's take something like a button and add this, you know, command for interest, all that stuff. You can absolutely fit geolocation into that pattern, in my opinion. So going right back around, I'm in the hot seat. Your question, what do I think about this geolocation element?
Yes.
In theory, declarative version of geolocation, great. In practice, wait a minute. Some people aren't talking to each other. Some people are like,
okay,
the invokers or interest people, I don't know what to call that camp, need to be talking more to the people who are now shipping a geolocation HTML element in a browser.
Yeah,
I like
There's some duplicated effort going on, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. The I'm invokers is like the... Yeah, Chris, you want to get in the hot seat?
Well, no. I'm does scared HTML of the hot seat. Does HTML
need a geolocation element? Chris Coyer.
My temptation is no, because I don't need to see what it returns is two coordinates, which I feel like just barfing those out onto the page is like not particularly useful. What I like where Jeremy was going, where imagine how invokers is coming along now. There's a command attribute and command equals, and the one that everybody's using it for right now is a named value, which is toggle-popover. So, and it's not a name that's made up. That's like a web standards name. What the job of that command is toggle-popover, the command could be command equals get coordinates or do geolocation or something. And now you've got this, as Jeremy put it, declarative way of getting this location with a button or something, because then it would be button command equals get coordinates and then four, and then the four points to like an input of type text or whatever it needs to be. And now you've got that stuff going. To me, that's clearly useful. Whereas, like, I don't understand what angle brackets geolocation is for. And I hate being the guy like, my brain can't immediately think of what it's useful for. So I hate it. I don't want to be that guy either. So I would be I'm open minded to reading a
that
document.
That guy's a guy on the internet. That guy, I've met that guy.
Well, it can be me sometimes. You know, I'm like, I don't get it. No.
Yeah.
But like, where's the README? Hit me up, baby. Okay, that's it.
No, the I guess the delta, right, is it that it calls a native permission dialog, like a, you know, by your lock icon, right, or whatever
the,
that.
The reason it exists is to trigger that dialog, the permissions one?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you go to Best Buy and you load it, and the only way it's in JavaScript, right? And so immediately it's like Best Buy's like, can we go know your address? And the whole website's crashing. Maybe it is a better experience for everyone if it's like a action trigger, user action, you know? But yeah, I don't know. I'm just the host of the hot seat.
Where's so. Serving me?
Yeah, can I get out of this hot seat now? Is that it?
Hot seat's over. Go back to the regular show.
All right, here's I'll put Dave in the hot seat then, right?
Twist.
No, but I do want to talk about, just because this is coming up at Web Day Out, Rachel's going to be there. Yay, Rachel's awesome. Talking, you know, she's at Google now, and she's been on this, the baseline train for a while and helping shape that and doing a good job and stuff. My question is just like, I've been trying to work out my own feelings about basically the word baseline for like a long time now, because it's always in this position of like weirding me out and like almost like, but it's almost because it's like taking territory on the ground. We're like, we're almost expected to say now, like, anchor positioning, that's baseline now. Like, it's almost like how you're supposed to say it. You're like, what does that mean, though? And I know they're trying to ascribe meaning to it, but even they're like, well, it has all kinds of different meanings. It can mean baseline newly available, which is what it is now, because it just shipped in Firefox. So do you say that it's baseline now? Or do you use the useful definition of it, which is baseline widely available, which is in all browsers for something like really long, like 3 years or at least 18 months? I forget the exact. They have some value for it, but it's like, then if you say the words anchor positioning is now baseline, just by itself that's meaningless. It's like, which one?
Yeah, I mean, your reaction is stop trying to make baseline happen. Baseline's not gonna happen. But I don't think people are using baseline. I think people use the stuff on the other side, the newly available, widely available. I hope that's what people are using. That people aren't using baseline as a catch-all. This new feature is
using
baseline
in language, like us talking. And then there's like programmatic usage too. And I see that they launched this, like, now you can make your post CSS or whatever, like your auto prefixer, can now use baseline information instead. I think that's cool, especially because there's like a bunch of people behind it now in a way that the data that it was being used before felt a little more nebulous of who's updating that browser support data and stuff. Yeah. I know who's updating browser support data for baseline. It's Google, you know, and or in conjunction with MDN and all that, which is like the canonical source of that information, which is great. So that's what I just mean by like, who's using it, like using it in blog posts and language and conference talks is one thing. And then using it programmatically is another thing.
Well, not programmatically, but last time I saw Rachel, I think it was at CSS Day, and she came up to me and she was so happy because I had just made public ClearLeft's browser support page policy.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a subdomain, browsersupport.clearleft.com. And I
you
do
use it.
Use baseline. Yes. Like, but not simply like, we will only support things that are this value of baseline. No, it's like, okay, here's the process we go through. Like, is it widely available? Fine. Okay, you can just use it. Like, that's basically the question. Uh-huh. Is it newly available? Okay, now you trigger this other process. Well, how are you planning to use this? Is it a progressive enhancement or is it mission critical? Because if it's mission critical, you maybe step away from the feature. If it's progressive enhancement, go for it. So
I would have thought you'd have been enemy number one, Jeremy, honestly, because they don't go down that road at all. If it's view transitions, who cares?
I think they're probably doing the right thing because they're setting themselves up to be the baseline of your browser support, but not the be-all and end-all. You're supposed to take baseline as a starting point. And frankly, it's a clever move because there's one thing Google has always had is this kind of political clout. Like, it's one thing for me to say, okay, our browser support policy is based on versions of browsers to and back because I said so, and that carries no weight. But as soon as you say, look, Google have this definition matrix that has these terms, it's like, okay, we will begin with that. We won't end with that. That's really important. And that's a lot of what Rachel's going to be talking about is how
This
is a starting point. And then and this is the reason why I wanted to run very early in the day, because there's going to be a lot of features coming up where maybe they're not completely, you know, universally available, but you can absolutely use them. Like Rich is going to be talking about web typography, and there's all sorts of neat little open type features and stuff you can put in your CSS reset that not every browser is going to support. And that's okay, because they fall into that category of, nice to have. Like, if the browser supports, it's great. It's not no one's going to die if it's not supported.
Yeah, I don't want people to turn their brain off. So I do kind of like what you're saying, is that you should then think about it. It just seems like, how hard can it be, though, to like give some kind of indicator whether this is essentially a progressive enhancement kind of thing or not? Like command invokers is not, because you're using it to like open or close something. That's vitally important. You absolutely cannot trust that if you're, you know.
So now you've got to go down a different route, which is, well, can we detect for it and polyfill if it's not there? That's a different way of doing it.
Now there's corner shape. Who cares? Corner shape, big deal. You do it or don't do it, whatever.
Yeah. So I don't think it's Google's job to cover all the possible ways of doing browser support. They're doing the bare minimum, I agree with you. And I think that's great. They're setting the baseline. It's actually a pretty good name for it.
Okay.
I also like it from a what's your baseline? Like, I can show you the features I put in here that are kind of risky, like anchor and popover and, I don't know, nesting. I put nesting on my site and somebody's like, I'm on an iPhone 8 that I'll never upgrade in my whole life. And I'm like, ooh, sorry. You know, like, I don't know if I can support that, but I'll see what I can do. But like, you know, I think like setting a baseline and then letting, you know, I deal with design systems. So it's a lot of like, let the product team decide, do they want to polyfill it? Do they want to transpile it? Do they want to, or just they can't use it, you know? So like, maybe that's like helpful for us is like, you know, here's like, if I run baseline 2022, who am I messing up? You know, maybe that's kind of cool. Like these sort of like, you know, I get a sense of how tolerant, I guess, my site is to kind of backwards compatibility, or am I just only cutting edge only, you know, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. What did you write back? That's where the rubber meets the road. Dave, what did you type back to that person?
Well, we just put the information up and then it's kind of like, but we offer polyfills and we've built in hooks to like add in, like Oddbird has a lot of polyfills for like anchor and popover. And so that's been useful. Like, you know, so it's kind of like, if you're outside of our little baseline, your browser matrix, your baseline doesn't match up with the features we're using, use these polyfills instead, you know? So it's kind of like a optional opt-in to polyfills.
Specific use case you talked about where someone's on, say, an old iPhone and they're not going to upgrade. That is actually a really interesting one. That's specific because that's like a lot of time you can kind of say to someone, okay, if you haven't upgraded your version of Chrome or whatever in years, that's kind of on you and we can't be expected to deal with that. But for people with iPhones and iPads, they can't, past a certain point, can't upgrade. Right. And stuff like iPads in particular, kind of meant to be this thing. Maybe you bought it 10 years ago and it's lying around. It's used casually. It's not your main machine. You shouldn't have to buy a new iPad to run a new version of Safari. So I've ranted many times about this, but tying browser updates to operating system updates when certain hardware just won't be able to do the operating system update, you know, it's like layers and layers of dependencies in a way that there's not much you can do in that situation. And that sucks.
No. Like,
effectively, it's encouraging people to buy new hardware when they don't need to.
And it's kind of an Apple only problem at the moment, which they, you know, they've done a little work to kind of decouple them a little. But there is kind of a limit to it. Remember, this used to be a hotter topic in JavaScript land, and then it used to be cool at one point to do the double bundle thing, where you're like, oh well, we'll ship the ES6 bundle all fancied up, and then somehow you detect, I forget how you would do it, but it would just detect for like one ancient feature or something, be like, ooh, that's an old browser, I'm gonna serve them the old school bundle, which was theoretically much larger. because it had all this poly-filled stuff in it. Never, as far as I know, we never even tried to do that with CSS. Like, Dave, can you serve an unnested version of your CSS with a quick little test? I don't think that ever became cool for whatever.
No, but they could take our CSS and then run it through Lightning and unnest it.
That's what I would do.
You know, so it's kind of like, hey,
but then for their customers, it's all or nothing. It's like,
yeah. I mean, they just have to put in a process. They have to own a process if they're like, they want to pass.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they're not using our style sheet directly at that point. So. But wouldn't it be cool? I don't know. Maybe it'd be cool if like somebody could like, you know, run Lightning on my CSS file to make my site work in their iPhone 8 or something. You know, maybe that's like
You know what I never thought about? Like, is the, you know how you can, I was just blogged this yesterday about the import or CSS import attributes. So you import a sheet from JavaScript. Now you can do that. Does it... Like, what if that CSS was nested? Does it matter anymore after it's imported? Ooh. Or is it kind of like, is its features kind of all flattened out and stuff? Not that there's any browser in the world that like supports that and not nesting. So in this case, it doesn't matter. But I wonder if like new features come along. It's like, what happens then to that imported style sheet? Because it's not really a syntax anymore. It's like a memory representation.
I do know this weird quirk with, so this is way in the weeds, but this is fun. With adopted style sheets. So when a browser adopts a style sheet, it will filter out any property it doesn't understand. So if I send a style sheet to Chrome that's cutting edge and adopt it, it's all the cutting edge stuff. If I send a style sheet and it'll like dedupe rules, you know, if you had two heights, the fallback height,
this 100% is the answer to
and
this,
height stretch. And then if I send that to Safari that doesn't do height stretch, it'll just nuke the height stretch. Like it's like, I don't understand that. It's gone. Where that you run into problems or like, you know, if one browser supports popover and you set an anchor name and you're going to polyfill and use that anchor name, well, the other browser that adopted the style sheet doesn't have anchor name anymore because it doesn't know what anchor name means. So you have to like actually write that in the HTML. Anyway, I get it though.
Yeah. Like, what if CSS did something really weird, like where it's like, oh, there's this new syntax where you use two curly brackets instead of one curly bracket, and then it's scoped or something weird like that. Mm-hmm. Then the thing that imports it, if you're in a browser that does support importing but not this new syntax, would just be like, burp, I don't get it. And just skip it.
Yeah, probably. Just rejects it. It's not. There's no fallbacks in adopted styles.
Isn't that part of the grain? Yeah. Or not the grain, but like the spirit of the web is like it's resilient though. It's not going to throw away the whole style sheet. It's going to parse what it can out of it. Which somebody had to write, which I think that's cool. Like somebody is like freshly writing that code, and that person who's writing that code, they maybe they're not even aware of it, but they're doing it in the spirit of decades of being like, we need to salvage as much of this code as we can because that's just what we do around here. Which is cool.
Fault tolerance.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's just one weird gotcha. It's hard to like progressively enhance when they're just ejecting features. But anyway, you know, JavaScript and CSS, we probably made a mistake somewhere.
All right, web day out, 12th of March, Brighton, England. What else are you looking forward to, Jeremy?
Well, I mean, the whole day, I think, is going to be excellent, but I'm biased. So, so obviously, there's going to be loads of cool stuff. Here's what you can do in browsers right now. Some of it's CSS, some of it's HTML, some of it's JavaScript features. It's all got this kind of agenda of the Monday morning. You should be able to use it right now.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of got the feeling over the last couple of years that a lot of people in framework land, React land specifically, started to feel like they were missing out. And they hadn't had that feeling for a long time. Like if you wanted to be at the cutting edge of what a typical web developer does, you do React. You go to the boot camp, you learn React, you get a job, you're doing React. That's what front-end development is. But going back to what we're talking about, these cycles of like, you know, technologies getting a lot of love and CSS, for example, getting so much love in the last couple of years that people started to wonder, oh, maybe I'm missing out by only ever using this subset of, I don't know, Tailwind or whatever it is I'm using over here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even get to use these new things. And all the stuff you're talking about, you know, dialogue, popovers, well, all this cool stuff that's happening. Where now your framework is actively fighting you. Now you're not able to use some of these features because you're using React, for example. And so I feel like the tide is maybe shifting. And what I would love at Web Day Out is for some people that maybe have that inkling, or that suspicion that they're missing out, to come to Web Day Out and kind of get in one day, get a kind of, here's the state of the union. Here's what you can do in browsers today. And I would assume they'd be quite surprised by how much you can do. And you don't need a framework. You don't need to do it in React. I mean, you can probably keep your framework if you want to, but at some point start to ask yourself, why am I even using?
That's a fun way to look at it, is that if you don't use anything, you just use the raw languages, you're locked out of nothing.
Now, they're not able to use features because, well, if React doesn't support it, I can't use it. And that's the tail wagging the dog. Like, something has gone wrong there, where your framework is dictating what technologies you can and can't use. But I think more than that, it's just the awareness. Like, I think people got very comfortable thinking, like, look, this works. React works. Tailwind works. Whatever it is. Yeah. I don't need to investigate new stuff. But I think some of the stuff is so exciting and interesting that people are starting to think, well, maybe I do actually need to investigate it. A little anecdote. I was at FFConf, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, and bumped into a local developer who was very much in the React land space. And we were chatting, and he was proudly telling me about this great system he's working on, kind of design system-y related, where there's lots of different departments. They all need to write their CSS, but it can't interfere with each other. So it's got to be, you know, modularized. And he was explaining to me this really clever JavaScript solution they got. And I was nodding and going, oh, right, I see. So kind of like cascade layers. And he said, like, what now? And I was like, well, maybe just go off and investigate. This was like during the morning break. I was like, well, just have a look. See if this cascade layers thing is in any way useful for what you're talking about. And I saw him at the next break, and he was like, oh my God, this is literally the problem we're trying to solve. And this technology would solve it. And they had invented a solution. Now,
oh, that's awesome.
So that's probably where I started to get the seed of the idea for Web Day Out. It was like, huh, like maybe there's a lot of people could do with being, you know, shown, hey, you can do all this now in browsers. I'm thinking that there'll be at least one thing during the day and Web Day Out that no matter how experienced you are or how up to date you think you are on the web, something's going to surprise you. And I've had that feeling.
You'll be like, excuse me?
Yeah. Like CSS Day. I come to CSS Day every year. I love it. And I love the way it treats CSS with respect, you know? But I go in there thinking like, well, I know CSS. I know my CSS. And often it's in the first talk I'll be like, huh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
I learned something new.
Yeah, people bring the noise at that one for sure.
Yeah, yeah. It's hardcore. It's not going to be that level at Web Day Out. We're not going to go that deep into the specific things. But the main thing is to basically continually ask this question. Did you know you could do this? You know? Right now, today, in web browsers.
I think an example of this, like being locked out of something, is how much, now we're going to talk about JavaScript just for a minute, but how much like control you cede of the DOM, and how like they're like, don't worry about that. We got it. You know, and then you're like, okay, well, that's mostly useful, I guess. And then an API like document.start view transition comes along, and you're like, okay, well, you just call that, and then in the callback you change some stuff in the DOM and it like transitions it for you, and you're like, wow, that's the cleanest little easiest API I've ever seen. This is incredible how this works. And then you try to use it in React, and React's like, don't touch the DOM.
I do that. DOM is bad, DOM is slow, VDOM better.
And so you're waiting around, and then React ships like, oh, you just, now we needed to update the entire library, and now you wrap it in a angle bracket capital view transition. And then you look at the docs and you're like, but that's different though. Like, how does that,
you know, what? We were talking about browser support. I think a lot of organizations, browser support is seen as less important than framework support. It's like, not do browser support view transitions, but does React support view transitions? And the moment when people start to use it isn't when it's widely available in browsers. Unfortunately, it's going to be, is it shipping in React? And that's sad. That's a bottleneck.
Yeah, that's happened over and over on the web, right? You're like, here's a nice thing. You can't have it, though, because SAS did something weird, you know? Sometimes we learn from our mistakes. Sometimes we don't, you know? Here's a classic one to me is the, like, if you're going to mess with the language, please use a different file extension. Please, 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 PostCSS didn't do that. And it still pisses me off. You know, you're like, you're augmenting the language, so stop doing that, you know? And I know SAS feels bad about it with import. Like, that import does something in CSS, and you steamrolled it, and that's weird. And now they feel bad about it. But things like that, you know, if you're going to mess with the language, then do it in a, like, very chill way.
Don't step on any toes.
Yeah. Namespace, at least.
I always feel like languages should build in the ability to fuck it up, for lack of a better term. Like, jQuery had the dollar sign, you know, it was like, I'm doing jQuery, you know, like, this is, I'm messing stuff up, but like, it would be great, you know, if like, oh, if you name your function with a, whatever, a dollar sign, then like JavaScript knows, like, where it'll never, like, if you go string dot dollar dot whatever, reverse or something like that, it knows this is a custom thing. And I wish CSS had something like that too. We kind of did with like dash dash prefix, like dash dash WebKit and stuff like that. Like, this is a non-standard, we made this up thing.
Don't bring back prefixes, Dave.
Yeah. We love them. They're we love them so much. Firefox put WebKit prefixes in Firefox. We love them. They're so great.
That's on us. That's on us.
Wet floor. Do you remember Box Reflect?
Does Firefox support WebKit Box Reflect? Yes. That's an amazing fact. If it
that's
does,
that's beautiful. Oh, that's good.
It really is.
Beautiful. It should. It's the greatest feature known to man. In the circa 2002.
That's an amazing piece of bar trivia for nerds.
Yeah, that would be good nerd bar trivia. Yeah, okay. Jeremy, you've been doing this for a long time, and we do need to wrap up, but how do you get, when you talk about CSS, how do you get people on the internet to stop saying, well, it doesn't work in my browser? How do you get people to stop saying that?
How will they know it's not working in their browser? You don't know what you don't miss, right? Nobody's out there with two browsers side by side going, wait a minute. This one's got a slightly nicer little bit to the interface than this one. That's my, you know, was it 20 years ago, 15 years ago, Dan Sidom had his website, the single serving website. Do websites need to look exactly the same in every browser.com? And you go there and it would say no, but the no would look different in different browsers. That message got lost at some point, and that's a bit of a shame. And it never seems to happen. Like, I ship little enhancements that I know are only supported in one or two browsers, and no one ever complains about missing them. They don't know they're missing them.
They don't know.
And then one day they upgrade their browser, and suddenly the interface looks a little bit nicer. It's like the opposite of technical debt. It's technical credit.
I remember when Firefox launched retransitions. It was like, my site upgraded for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I did nothing. Didn't do anything. I went to bed.
Yeah.
So that was great.
That's the perfect example. What a good API.
All right. Well, I know we have to stop here. I got a hard stop edition, but Jeremy, thank you so much for coming on the show. For people who aren't following you and giving you money, how can they do that?
Well, they can. If you're in the UK, you should come to Web Day Out. Go to webdayout.com. Here's a discount code, Shop Talk Show. If you use that discount code, you'll get a discount off your ticket price. That's what you should do. It's because it's going to be a great day.
Yay. Great.
Awesome. Thank you. And subscribe to
a web day out.
Jeremy's RSS feed. I'll say that too. What were you going to say, Chris?
Nothing. I just liked how it's Wallace and Gromity, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, bye. ShopTalkShow.com. Bye.